advice do you have for especially parents who are sequestered with their youngsters or maybe teenagers, even more important, teenagers?
Yes. I will say a few things. One is that the children are watching. So it's up to us as the adults to be adults. And I know that maybe the husband gets on his on the mother's the wife's nerves, or an aunt who's living happens to be living with them, or a roommate that you didn't know you were going to wind up being living with for 2 years. It just you invited
Or
them
the
in.
tension about money right now is huge.
Yes, absolutely. So we're going to be, we're going to be at each other a little bit, but just know that the children are watching, and know that how we talk, Justine, if we could see each other's energy fields as we talk to each other, we would be obliged to be so much more gentle. Because, it even in a like a work situation, when you walk up to somebody and you say, "Are you okay? You look really tired." All of a sudden, the energy around them collapses, and they go, "Yeah, I guess I didn't sleep all that well." And pretty soon, that's been a little curse you put on them. But if you say to them, "I heard a really great thing about you," or "Did you lose weight?" or "I love your new hairdo. That looks, you look 20 years younger." They light up like there was a candle inside. And everything that we say has that kind of effect on each other. So we know that we have to be much more gentle. But especially with children, we can, and I want to talk a little bit too about grieving and loss, because there are people dying, and sometimes it's grandma and grandpa, and that's how do you explain it to a kid? I mean, there's no explanation for this. So what we have to do is find ways to help them process it at least, and be, just allow them to know that you're there. Allow them to know, and adults are grieving too, of course. Adults have lost parents and people who are important to them.
And also on that point, if let's say the person who has contracted coronavirus and they're in the hospital, we can't go visit them. They're isolated from family, except using maybe FaceTime or something like this to be able to see each other. And that is terribly difficult too.
Yes, it's horrible. This is the saddest way to die. It's just very sad, because you want to be able to touch. It's not being able to touch, in nonverbal first aid, and beyond words, touch is so important. Touch is a way that we connect. They say the hug is something that you give and receive at the same time. It's just a totally wonderful thing. And people, it's been interesting that men have been that willing to hug. It was not a big thing with especially American men. They were too macho. And all of a sudden, men have been hugging each other, and now that's done for some period of time. And so this is really hard. I know I'm kind of jumping around on a lot of different things, but I want to say about children, and I have a little note here, that when you're talking to kids, they have a different worldview than you do. And you're the one who gives them the worldview that they have, but they still can make mistakes. And I'll tell you a funny story about that I tell with doctors. And one of them is, there was a young boy who had abdominal surgery, I guess. And so he was crying, and the doctor came in, and the mother was there, and the mother said his stomach is bothering him, and the doctor palpated and said, "Oh, it's just gas." And the mother said, "Oh, okay," and the doctor left. That evening, the mother was home, and the doctor was doing rounds, and she came into the room with the young boy who was crying, and she said, "What's the matter?" And she finally figured out that what he thought when she said, "You have gas," was that it was ExxonMobil, and that if you struck a match, he would explode. Gas to him is what's that you put in your car tank. And she said, "I realized I didn't talk to my patient." And so we have to talk to children and find out what's bothering them. Because, there's an old joke about the kid comes home from school and he says, "Mommy, where am I from?" And she goes into the, "Where'd I come from?" And then she goes into the whole long thing about a man, a father and a mother, and they do this and that and the egg and the sperm. And he goes, "Okay, Mom, but where am I from? Bobby's from Ohio. And that's all he meant. So before you go into the long story, find out what it is they're trying to understand. And that way they're really heard, and you don't have to sometimes get off on a different track you didn't even want to get into, like the birds and the bees. So the other story about children having mistaken notions about things. There was a young girl who had a serious cut on her arm, and it had been sewn up. And while she had stitches, she was very, very brave, terrifically brave. She was wonderful. And then when it came time to take the stitches out, she became hysterical and would not allow it and screamed and yelled and dug her heels in. And nobody could figure out why, because it's so much less painful to remove stitches. So what was her problem? And then the mother remembered that some time ago, her Raggedy Ann doll, her rag doll, had lost an arm. The mother had sewn it back on. And if you take the stitches out,
the arm falls off.
So that's not illogical on her part. It's not illogical. It's just a different worldview from ours and the real world that, you know, arms grow back together on human beings. So it's important when a child is upset about something to find out what they're really upset about. You just stop everything and listen, especially listen. What's going on? And when a child is upset, it's a wonderful thing to see if you can learn what's upset them, because they may not even know. Sometimes you have to say, "Are you upset because blah blah?" And you might notice that their shoulders just sink and they think, "Yeah, I didn't know that's what was bothering me." So at least check in with them. Don't say you're being bad, go to your room. When they're upset, they act bad because they don't have another way to deal with it. They don't have our ways. They can't go to the refrigerator and get a glass of wine. They don't know what to do when they're upset. And so, yes, they act out. So sometimes to punish them for acting out is not solving the problem for them or you. It's not going away. So find out what's going on. What is troubling you? It makes all the difference in the world.
I'd like to go back briefly to grief. We highlighted mm-hmm. that for a moment. And I know that at some point in your career, you were in China after a devastating earthquake. I think 80,000 people died in the earthquake. And I would imagine part of your work there was about grief. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And the way that they did it, we were talking at a psychology college, but they don't have much psychology, or they didn't at the time. It was 2008. They didn't. If you're sick, you go to a doctor. If you're having a mental problem, think differently is the way they thought it. But they did have these psychologists who would talk by phone to people who would call in. And when 80,000 people died, the earthquake in Sichuan knocked down the schools. It happened at 2:00 in the afternoon. The children were in school. The shops did not fall down. The schools were shoddily built, and parents were furious that because of the shoddy workmanship, their children died. And remember, they could only have one child.
Right.
Horrifying. So they were really upset. And so these therapists had to talk to them on the phone. So I had to pretend to be the therapist, and they had to pretend to be the mother in this giant auditorium. And so they would come up, but it was all translated, so you don't even know what's going on. But the therapist was telling me about this little girl who had died. And I said, "Tell me about her. Tell me what she was like." Because sometimes when we lose someone, we really want to bring them back with the good memories. So she says she loved to dance and blah, blah, blah. And the parents, the mothers, were committing suicide. They had a child. They lost their child. They only were allowed to have one. And they didn't know if they could still have another. So they were literally committing suicide. So I was trying to think how to keep this woman alive, even though she lost her child. And finally, I said to her, "You know that your daughter lives." Oh, this woman turned her back to me. She said, she's on the phone, so I can't even see her face. And she turned around and she's telling me about her daughter. And I said, "Your child lives. She lives in your heart." And the woman went back to the auditorium, and then moments later, she came running back up and grabbed the microphone. And for 2 minutes, Justine, for 2 minutes, she's talking in Chinese, where I don't know if she's mad at me. I mean, it's very emphatic talking. And I just didn't know if I'd said the wrong thing, the right thing, and I couldn't. And I had to wait for the translation. And the translation was, my heart never felt so good. And people were crying in the audience. Now, that's not a brilliant thing to say, but it is an important thing to say. When you love somebody and you know you have been in grief, you have loved somebody, you can keep them alive in your heart because they always are there. They are the most important thing. They are vivid in our memories. They're as alive as yesterday. Yesterday is alive. And so it's really a way of honoring how important that person is to you. And also, even when you're grieving deeply, it says how important that person is to you. And so that's just really major.
Exactly. So when you said earlier how these kinds of words are even more powerful than a pill, than some sort of prescription, that they really can change our physiology. They change the whole scene. They alleviate PTSD, that we talked about, the little girl, that her memory of that moment of that accident maybe saved her from PTSD, that she was felt her courage. So these are some of the things that we can really tap into when we talk.
What's so important is we all have words. All we have to learn is how to use them. I'm going to tell you that in the next segment.
Okay. Don't go away. Okay, great. Well, I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Judith Simon Prager, and she, along with her co-author, Judith Acosta, are the authors of The Worst Is Over, Verbal First Aid to Calm, Relieve Pain, Promote Healing, and Save Lives. And she's also the author of the book, The Dolphin Speak, What the Dolphin Said. And so she's also worked with communication with animals. So maybe we can touch on that just briefly, at least in the next segment. But I'm looking forward to more conversation. And I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Judith Prager. And you can find more about her work, and her website is chock full of all sorts of good things. It's judithprager.com. That's Judith Prager, PRAGER.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Judith Prager, and she's a co-author with Judith Acosta of The Worst Is Over. And Judith, verbal first aid, very, very powerful. What more can you tell us about it?
When I give my talks, I often point out that you have to say what it is you want to have happen, not what you don't. And the way that we show it is by telling the whole audience, everybody, we'd like you to imagine any animal, picture and imagine any animal in the kingdom of animals, any animal that you want to imagine except elephants. Don't think about African elephants with the big ears and the big, and what are you thinking about? You're thinking about elephants, because in this sentence, don't think about elephants. There's nothing else to think about. So your little son comes in, here you are all contained in this little small house, and your little son comes in grabbing his stomach, and you say, oh, please, Johnny, don't vomit. What does he hear? Vomit? What a good idea. I didn't even think of that. That's a great idea. You might as well duck and cover if you say don't vomit. What you want to say is, oh, tell me about your stomach. Maybe you could imagine that your stomach is just relaxing, like our kitten, the way our kitten curls up and relaxes. Maybe your stomach could just curl up and relax like that. Or there was some one of our students said, my grandmother used to say, and so how's your head? And the kid would say, my head is all right. And she said, why don't you go lie down, and pretty soon your stomach will feel like your head. So whatever it is that you want to do, but don't say what you don't want to happen. You see the little kid with the lower lip going up and down like he's about to cry. If you say, don't cry, the next thing you hear is, so instead of that, say, tell me what's going on. And the poor kid who was just about to cry changes gears and says, well, Bobby hit me and I, blah, blah. So that's fine. We get to talk instead, and we get to figure it out. And that's fine. You know, sometimes you hear a parent say, don't run, you'll fall. And then the kid runs and falls. And the mother says, I told you you would. Yeah, you told him he would. So instead of that, say, walk carefully, or take your time, or there's plenty of time, or watch where you're going. That's all. Just don't make it, because all of this is a suggestion. And especially young kids are open to suggestion all the time, because they're in an altered state, usually till they're about 7. They're in and out of this altered state. So everything is a suggestion to them. And that's why it's so important to be, you know, when I'm in therapy and I'm with my clients, they won't even remember, but it will come up eventually that their parents said, you'll never amount to anything, or who will ever love you, you're not lovable. When you say those things, they get embedded, you know, they get, that's part of who I am now, and that's not good. So I can't say be a perfect parent. I wasn't a perfect parent, and I don't know anybody who is, but all I can say is, if you're aware of it, I wish I could go over and start over. No, not really, but if I did start over, I'd be a better parent. And I think being aware that what you say, especially saying what you want to have happen, not what you don't, is really helpful. Sit down and draw. You'll feel so happy. Let's draw a picture. And even when we're talking about grieving, let's draw a picture about your favorite time with Grandpa. Just draw, what did you love best? Remember when you went to the circus with Grandpa and you came back and you told us all about the elephants, speaking of elephants or whatever. If you draw a picture of yourself and Grandpa, and then it's, you know, he lives in that child's heart. You know, it's alive while you're doing it.
You know, I got an email from a very dear friend of mine and former guest of New Dimensions, Brenda Peterson. Mm-hmm. And she just wrote this article for Tikkun magazine. And she started it off with something really that relates to your work, Judith. And she actually ended up in the hospital with pneumonia. And she was in total isolation. And so when the nurses would come in, they'd be all in their equipment, their PPE, their personal
equipment. Yeah, it's nice to have it, isn't it? It's really good if you have it.
And, you know, she only had her little iPhone, I guess, or some phone with her music and so forth. And her fever was quite high. And she was like 105 degrees. And one midnight, a Haitian nurse came in. She mentioned specifically the Haitian nurse, Maureen, came in. And she told the nurse, she said, I don't know if I will survive. And the nurse said these words, which is just so powerful, I think. The nurse said, just this one night. That's all you have to get through, just this one night. And somehow for Brenda, it broke the fever. She was able to get through the night. And it was those words from that nurse. that helped her to say, don't worry so far into the future. Just get through this night. You're going to be fine in this night. What do you think?
That is such a blessing. It's exactly right. There's a story Stephen King said. He was the writer, Stephen King, who writes all this horror stuff, was hit by a van. And when he looked down at his body, his whole pelvis was twisted 90 degrees. And he said, an EMT picked him up and he said, am I going to die? And the EMT said, not yet. And that's all he said. And later on, when and Stephen King held on to that, like just this one night, it was exactly the same feeling. Oh, good, I'm still alive. When he later on, he went to talk to that EMT after it was well over and said, you know, thank you for saying that. And the EMT said, I just meant you weren't going to die on my watch. I had no idea. But it doesn't matter because it's so important that we have a rope to hang on to. We need something to hold on to. And if an authority figure, and it doesn't have to be a real authority figure, as I was saying with Gabrielle Giffords and her assistant who knew nothing except to hold her hand. If somebody's here and somebody knows and somebody seems to care, it gets us through in such a beautiful way. It's absolutely essential. And so you say what you want to have happen. Get through this night. Thank you for saying that story. It's a perfect story. Get through this night. Yes. And so I'm watching. I'm here for you. Let's do it.
And that's what I did when I sat by the side of the road with that woman after that car accident. And it was so incredible, Judith, because I had just done that interview with you a couple of days before. Mm-hmm. And when this traffic was stopping and I was the first car, and there was this woman and she was already out by the side of the road. And I could tell that she was confused. She was in pain. She was upset and anxious. And I was just able to go over and just touch her very gently and say, I'm here and help is on the way.
And magic words, help is on the way. And I don't think, how am I going to put myself together? What am I going to do? This is the end of my life. This is so horrible. What am I supposed to do? I don't know what to do. I've never been in a car crash before. I think I'm going to die. And then somebody says, no, I'm right here. Help is on the way. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So I wonder if you want to say anything about this other piece of work that you have, which is what the dolphins said, and you've worked with dolphins and communications beyond all of our verbal communications. There's other communications that you've experienced.
That's right. I wanted to know what nonverbal first aid would be like. I even went to see equine assisted therapy, which is horses, and that was kind of interesting. But I was called to the dolphins. I felt like they are wiser than anything, and we don't even know how smart they are. And I was able to go down and watch them work with some children with disabilities, and they were not dolphins who were sitting in the swimming pool. They were in a large lagoon, and they were doing this of their own volition. Sometimes there are animals who want to help. That's all they want to do. You know, it's also true about those rescue dogs, that the people who train them to be rescued and come through a pile of rubble and find somebody, those dogs get very depressed if they don't find anybody. So their trainers have to go and hide so the dogs can find somebody and feel like they've done their job. There are animals who want to work with us. They're honored. We're honored. It's wonderful. But what I learned about the dolphins is I think they're telepathic, and they understand, because many of these kids could not speak and yet they knew. And so the head physical therapist who I was working with as I was looking at these kids told me one story of one time where he suggested to the dolphin that he move this child through the water by his foot, and the dolphin refused and moved him by his shoulder. And when the therapist got out, he mentioned it to the mother. The dolphin refused, and the mother said, "Oh, I forgot to tell you, he had a surgery on his foot." And the dolphin knew that. I mean, they know this. They can see inside of us. They think it's very funny when we have metal implants. They can see when there's a fetus inside us. They send out echolocation, and it comes back. Their echolocation, their Visual and auditory nerves are joined in their brain. They have an extra lobe. And so they send out a sound and it comes back as a picture. It looks like ultrasound, the way we see a baby in the uterus. They can do that and they can send that to each other. And they are miraculous, and they rescue us. People who work, marine biologists, say they rescue us from sharks, from drowning, and they ask nothing of us, except to stop polluting the ocean, but that's a different thing. But they do this, and they say dolphins are altruistic, but they're not sure why. Well, I'm sure why, and this is why I want to talk about it, and I will be going to a conference in England with mystics and scientists. They're altruistic because we're all in this together, because they know it. We all meet somewhere in consciousness. That's the answer, and we're learning it now in this crazy situation.
Absolutely. Judith, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. You're a wealth of wisdom and information and help to us. Thank you so much. I've been speaking with Dr. Judith Simon Prager, and she is the author of The Worst Is Over, Verbal First Aid to Calm, Relieve Pain, Promote Healing, and Save Lives. And her co-author is Judith Acosta. And if you want to know more about her work, go to her website, judithprager.com, P-R-A-G-E-R, judithprager.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3700.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973. Thanks to the generosity of our listeners.
CGSF 90.1 FM.
You have a deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore.
Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
This is Bird Note. If you know how to distinguish it, the song of the red warbler is enough to tell you whether the morning is clear. No need to get out of bed or check the weather forecast. During the breeding season, between February and May, they happily sing on sunny mornings. But if it's cloudy, they won't sing, no matter the season. So this is what a clear morning sounds like. Red warblers are the tiniest weather station you can imagine, barely 5 inches long and weighing less than a AAA battery. They're endemic to the highlands of Mexico, so to hear them, you have to venture into the humid forests of pine, oak, and fir. Although you can spot red warblers in a large part of the country's territory, they don't travel between states. When taking care of their offspring, both parents care for their chicks. But they approach their nests only for a few seconds to avoid attracting predators. It's just one of their tricks for survival. Although there is evidence of a slight decline in their populations, it's not a drastic one. So hopefully, we'll have our little weather stations around for a long time. For BirdNote, I'm Lucina Melesio.